We're about to chat with an adoptee about his experience with adoption and race. Join us today on Fostering the Future.
Welcome to the Fostering the Future podcast, a show about all things child welfare, dependency, adoption, and foster care. Here are your hosts, veterans in the world of child welfare, Jack and Kat.
We believe that every human has incredible and equal value regardless of what side of the courtroom we sit on. We hope that everyone feels welcome and accepted here on Fostering the Future.
Make sure you follow us on Facebook or Instagram as Fostering the Future Podcast, or check us out on our website at fosteringthefuturepodcast.org.
This is Kat, and I'm here with Jack, and today we're chatting with Rick, who is a TikToker and a gym rat, and also happens to be adopted. Thank you for joining us, Rick.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're glad you're here.
Before we get started, we have a very serious question to ask you. What is your favorite beverage at Starbucks?
I actually don't drink anything coffee related. I don't think I've ever stepped foot in a Starbucks.
Wow. I got the idea from your TikTok that you have a pretty healthy lifestyle. Is that why you don't drink coffee, or do you just not like it?
No, I work out and do things so I can enjoy the things I like. So Little Caesars, I eat pizza all the time. But as for caffeine, I can't sleep if I have any caffeine in my system. And so I just stay away from it.
So instead of Starbucks, your vice is Little Caesars?
Heck yeah. Been waiting for that sponsorship since high school.
What is your Little Caesars order?
Either the slicing sticks or just a pepperoni pizza.
Is Little Caesars the one that just started making those little, what are they called? Yes.
Yeah.
Those are pretty tight. We had gotten Little Caesars for the kids last week. My husband brought those home and he was like, you've got to try one of these. They're pretty awesome. Have you heard about them, Kat? It's like a little, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like a little ball of pizza.
No, but I'll have to try that.
It's like an enclosed little pizza ball. I don't know.
So, Rick, you have experienced success on TikTok and you have over 1 million followers, which is really hard for me to even imagine. I think I have like 700, maybe not many. What were your thoughts when you started your account, and did you expect it to come this far?
I guess I had never like started it with like a goal. So before like TikTok was a thing, before it had hit, I started making videos in college. I was always just making like weird videos and putting them on my like Snapchat story. And I had a friend that was like, yeah, they have an app for that where you can just go do it there. And I think that was his nice way of being like, we're getting annoyed of your Snapchat stories, bro. Like, go do that elsewhere. But yeah, so downloaded it, just started posting videos. People seemed to like it. And then before I knew it, I had amassed somewhat of a following. So it was kind of like a bet as well, because there was this girl in our friend group that we had been like hanging out for like a Friendsgiving, and she was bragging to everyone, like, I got 100 likes on TikTok, like, you know, and we're like, enough, like, it can't be that hard. And then the very first video I posted ended up just blowing up. It was kind of just like, we told you, but also like, oh.
What was the video?
I was doing a bunch of voice impressions. And so,
oh yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah. And then,
you have talent. That'll do it.
I was super into like video games at the time as well. And so did like some gaming videos, just very basic, relatable. And then, yeah, the rest is history.
That's awesome.
Really cool. Rick, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. I love working out. I wish I had the motivation for like more one-on-one. Because I would have just been a trainer or something. But I really like the idea of, I don't know, just expressing yourself through fitness in that way. And that's not all fitness, because there's like the people out there who run. You won't ever catch me running. That's not something that I'll ever volunteer to do. But yeah, I also love to travel. The world's really big. It's beautiful. People are super cool. I'm just seeing like how different everyone is everywhere you go. And I just think it makes you a little more prepared for the world around you if you can say you've been outside of your backyard.
Yeah.
What's the coolest place you've been to, your favorite?
My favorite place that I've ever been to? Yeah, that's a tough one, because I guess There's like the physical like locations that you would go where you'd be like, this was super awesome. But then you have the element of like going certain places with like certain people. And 'cause I've been a lot of cool places, but like one of my favorite would be, my roommates in college were very into the outdoors. And so we just randomly went camping in the middle of nowhere in the woods. And that's one of my favorite places I've ever went, you know. It's hard to like compare the two when one's got a little more like sentimental value while the other has exploratory value, I guess.
So Jack watched one of your stitches where you responded to a popular TikTok asking why so many white people adopt black children. And you prefaced it by saying that you are a black man adopted by white parents. Can you tell us about your adoption, only what you feel comfortable sharing?
Yeah. So I was adopted. My brother and I were both adopted. So we're Haitian. We moved around a lot, especially growing up, like early on. I think just like being adopted, there's just different challenges. And when I saw that video, I was really disappointed because it almost paints like the character of what people would perceive like my parents as. And like, I think my parents are like the greatest people on the planet. I just really didn't agree with how she was trying to like frame the people who adopt. I think there's very little that she knows about the individuals that choose to go out of their way and like raise people that aren't their own. It rubbed me a little the wrong way. So I tried to speak up somewhat against it, but also I try to be like loving and understanding at the same time.
Oh yeah, I think you did a good job. So you and your biological brother were both adopted from Haiti.
Yep.
And then you got to the United States and you moved around a little bit.
Yep.
I thought that was culture shock when you got here.
Yeah, it was insane. So my brother was actually adopted first. That's when they like discovered who I was. And then they came back a few years later to adopt me.
When they adopted your brother, they found out that he had a brother and then came back to adopt you. Is that kind of what happened?
Yeah.
How old were you when they adopted you?
When I got to the States, they assigned like social security, birthday, things like that. I think they were hoping to kind of keep my brother and I close together. So they put us in the same grade. And so I'm the same age as him. It's kind of like a wonky thing. I always joke with my parents, if I get adopted again, I'm going to be older than my brother next time.
So they like picked your birthday?
Yeah. So they didn't really have records, too much information about us, like birthdays, anything like that. And so we were adopted, I think, in 2002, 2003.
So what age did they assign you? I guess what I'm wondering is like, were you middle school age, elementary school age, toddler age when you came here from Haiti?
We were elementary school age. We were both put in like a lot of English classes to like learn English so we could be in school. I mean, I was always kind of like the small kid. So I looked like I was in middle school when I was like in high school. It's actually funny that after I graduated high school, I finally started growing and started kind of like looking how I do now and kind of like shocked everyone. And it was just like, yeah, I guess they kind of oofed it a little bit.
I think it's kind of cool, though, that they did that so you and your brother could be close and that you would have each other, especially because you're coming into a new environment. So my oldest son, we adopted from Uganda. I think it's kind of surprising to people in America that birth certificates and stuff like that just aren't as common in other countries. Like, it's not a big deal.
It was kind of like a weird thing to adjust to because once I got like acclimated to the language and some of the culture, like within the States, like a lot of things were kind of weird to grasp onto. It was like, yeah, like this is, we're going to celebrate your age. Like that's nothing that we had done before.
Yeah.
Like even like Christmas, like some old dude's going to come bring us presents. Why? Like dude didn't do that before. So yeah, it was just, it's something that wasn't like, there wasn't too much emphasis put on before, especially in a lot of other countries. It's not that emphasized. And so coming to the States, it wasn't that big of a deal to me that it wasn't that accurate because I don't know if I would have cared.
But you were old enough that you remember Haiti, right?
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I struggle with a little bit because I think a lot of his memories at this point are, you know, from pictures and things like stories that we've retold and stuff like that. And I wish that he had more of like a core memory of some of that stuff. There's challenges just in being adopted, regardless of your race. But interestingly, this has come up lately with me and my oldest son. We were at the Disney park, Typhoon Lagoon, the water park a week or two ago. And he's like, hey, see that kid over there? He came up and asked me, was like, hey, your mom's white, huh? And he's like, yeah. And the guy's like, my mom's white too. How do you like it? I didn't really understand it, but like he's starting to navigate those situations. What have been the biggest challenges for you as a black man adopted by white parents?
I think like growing up, when you're kind of going through those formative years and trying to like self-identify as like an individual, there's a lot of like internal pressures on yourself to like relate. So you try to relate with different groups, whether it's friend groups, academic groups, sports groups, and like being adopted, like one of those things that wasn't necessarily just given like with most children is like your familial group. So going places, not getting to look like your family. And sometimes that could get in your head. When I was younger, it was a lot more of the internal pressures on myself. While as I've gotten older, it's more the external. It seems like people have opinions about it. And like, fortunately, I've gotten to the point where I'm like confident in myself and like in my family now. It's almost like kind of like a nosy thing that people need to put in their two cents. I don't know. I think one super strange thing in America is like you see it in like music and like media and especially movies. But like being adopted is kind of an insult. You know, like you go to your little brother and you're like, you're adopted. And it's supposed to be like this big insult. And then being someone who is adopted, it's just like that's extreme misrepresentation of what adoption is, because I think it's the hardest thing in the world to decide to love a child that's not your own as your own.
Well, and your parents, it sounds like they were successful, like they did a good job.
Yeah, they're wonderful people.
Are there other siblings aside from you and your biological brother?
There wasn't that much information as for my biological family. So David was the one that I like knew for sure. More than likely, there was like more. And then I have other siblings. But as for like my brother, he was adopted a few years before me. It was kind of difficult when I was trying to acclimate to the United States. One, because he had kind of forgotten his home language. Like you knew someone, then you see him again a while later, and then you're unable to communicate with him. So that was kind of like a weird thing. I don't know. My parents did their best to try to foster so we could keep both languages. But the dialect of Creole, which is one of the many Creoles spoken in Haiti, there just didn't seem to be anyone locally that spoke it. And so it was hard to like keep it going. And so I lucked out. I feel like I still speak it quite decently. You can definitely tell I like don't live in Haiti and I don't spend that much time around other Haitians, but my brother no longer speaks it at all. And so that was one difficult thing.
I can't imagine what that must have been like to see your brother again and then him not speak the language that you've always spoken together. Like that must have been wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Really surreal. The fact that you've been able to keep Creole, I think is really amazing because for a lot of reasons, especially because you didn't have really anybody to talk to in Creole.
Yeah. I think it was just because I stayed longer. I think I put a little more importance like into it, you know? And so like growing up, I remember even like learning English. It was kind of difficult because a lot of my like assignments and stuff, they wouldn't always be in English. And it was kind of hard to like split the two. And so I get like teachers that are like, yeah, we don't know like how to tell them to keep everything in English or stuff like that. But I wish my brother would have still been able to at least like partake in his home language.
The main language in Uganda is Lugandan. That's spoken across the country, but the area that my son is from speaks something slightly different, which is Lugisu. And there are some similarities in the language. Like there are some phrases that are similar. We're able to find a college student who was adopted from Uganda who taught Ugandan adoptees the language, like retaught it. And that was really cool because she did it over Zoom and it was during COVID. And I think it was for probably college credits or something like that. But he got to meet a lot of people and obviously was able to pick it up pretty quickly, I guess, because he had kept some of it. You know, that slightly different language where the only time that we can really get a hold of that language is when we speak with, we still have a relationship with the woman who runs the orphanage that he was at. And so sometimes I'll be like, hey, can you tell me how to say this again? Or I think it's special and it's something that I want for him. And I wish that there was more access to it. Unfortunately, there's so many languages that, you know, some of these that are more localized to certain regions are harder to get access to. Like you can't even like Google it.
I mean, I'm sure like someone who is like a developmental psychologist could speak to this a lot better. But I think that the language that you had when you were small and didn't have any like written language and those like really early developing years, I think there's a lot of like emotional connections there. I think it is really good to maintain as much as that of that early language as you possibly can. In every language, there are things that you can only really connect with in that language, or you can only really describe in that language. I know German is like famous for that, having so many words that describe things that we don't have here. So I think it's really amazing that you were able to keep that, you know, as much as you could. My parents are deaf, and so I had like really poor English language skills really like my entire childhood. I probably still do. I can remember being like 7 and 8. There are lots of words I didn't know, like lots. And I remember not saying certain things, like, I think I've told you this, Jack, but like not saying, my mom had a baby when I was 7 and I didn't want to say diaper because I was afraid I would say diarrhea. And that was so embarrassing to me that I would accidentally say that. I made all these substitutions. So instead I would say Pampers because my English skills were just like not great. What are some things that you are thankful that your parents did right?
You kind of think your parents are heroes no matter what, you know, like it's kind of hard to like see your dad as anything else but Superman and like your mom as anything but the most caring and like smartest woman on, you know what I mean? And so the fact that they can look back and say that they did their best in like raising us, like they loved us, I think that's like all I can ask for, you know, especially comparatively speaking to like what my life would have been. It's hard not to just be grateful for like them, period.
I think there's like so much maturity in that because I think a lot of times people don't see that.
Yeah.
In the sense of educating the rest of us who are still raising little ones, adopted little ones that don't share the same shade of skin, what are some of the things either that you wish your parents had done different or that your parents did differently from most parents that you think helped, whether it be your mental health or your overall wellness and view of self?
I don't know that there's anything that can be done that's going to take away from the fact that I feel like every adopted child at some point in their life is going to feel like they don't belong, you know? And I don't think it's a realistic idea to think that there's things you can do, especially during formative years. That's kind of what kids do anyway. They just tend to go through those times of uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And so it might be somewhat an unrealistic standard or pressure to put on parents. I just think the biggest thing is as long as you can like love the children as if they were your own, I don't think there's much you can do wrong. I would compare it to any other parent. As long as you know that like you treat and you value your kids as your own, you like love them how a parent is supposed to, then you can be there for them during those times. But I don't think looking back, there's anything my parents could have done to eliminate the fact that like I felt certain ways or I thought certain things at certain times. It was kind of just something that I had to experience, go through.
Just loving your kid, obviously, as your own, being there for them while they're going through those experiences. You feel like that's a solid place where parents can support their kids while they're going through that stuff.
Where it can go wrong is if it's taken personally, like mm-hmm. if a child feels hurt that they don't like resemble their family. I think if the family takes that personally, that can be an issue. But like, as long as you're supportive and understanding and being able to articulate support and just be there for them and still like loving them unconditionally, I don't think there's much else that is needed to be done. I kind of think it's something that it's like an internal struggle that you go through and then you learn from.
That really makes me feel a lot better because my son did go through a couple years there that were really hard. And I struggled with worrying that there was more that I could have done to prepare him for that time. I've always tried to impress on him the beauty of the culture that he comes from, the pride that he should have in who he is and what he looks like. And so it was really hard to watch him go through a period of time where he questioned like his own value, because I'm like, the person I see in front of me is literally one of the most amazing human beings on the planet. The fact that I get to parent him just, I mean, I'm kind of obsessed with him, but the fact that I get to be his mom to me is like, I just don't understand how I got so blessed to be able to have that role in his life. I'm just so in awe of like the strength that he has and who he is. And like, it blew me away that he could go through not feeling confident in himself. I think all parents were always like, how could I have done this better? And how could I have made this easier for my kid? It does make me feel a little better for you to say that, like, that's probably just something he would have to go through regardless of what I could have done to prepare him for it.
Did they do anything to like support your culture? You were adopted as a child from Haiti. So it's not like you were a newborn who knew nothing. You had an entire culture that you left behind.
Yeah. I guess with Haiti being as small of a population as it is already, and then it's not that prominent within the States, especially in the areas that I was living. There are like pockets of populations within the United States, Southern Florida and like Louisiana, mm-hmm. things like that, that are very saturated with like Haitian people and a bit of Haitian culture. But I guess with the locations that I was at, it's kind of like a hard feat to try to you know?
Yeah.
If it was like I was from France, it'd be pretty easy to yeah. like, here's a baguette. But you know, yeah. it was there was very little understanding of the like Haitian culture. Even now, like I'm learning new things about like the Haitian people, but they always like reaffirmed me in the fact that like you are Haitian American, you're from Haiti, you should be proud of that. I'm glad they didn't put the pressure on themselves to feel the need that they had to like try to do that. You know, they tried their best to make sure I was confident in my identity, but at the same time, I don't know if it was the most realistic ask for them to be able to do that. It's kind of a difficult thing. And then the small subpopulation of Uganda, I feel like that'd be like difficult too. You know, if it was a little more like prominent, you know, Nigerian with the most popular language, there's going to be a lot more things that you can do to acclimate them like within those cultures. But especially when it is a rare population or a smaller population, it is hard to bring that within life, especially dependent on location within the States.
I think that people often do put a lot of pressure on themselves to do those things. And so it's interesting to, you know, it's good to hear that you felt comfortable and, you know, you didn't want your parents to put all that pressure on themselves. I know your biological brother is here, but do you have any connections or any relationship with anybody else that you're biologically related to?
No, we kind of lucked out because the laws in Haiti kind of changed right after I was adopted, made it a lot more difficult. Even the fact not being able to like go and visit like Haiti is like somewhat a difficult thing, just for like the safety of, and that's everyone in like America that lives in America, if they're like from Haiti or of Haitian descent, it's very like highly advised not to visit Haiti just because of how corrupt it can be there at times. The best connections I have are like other people that I've met sharing similar roots. And I have this kid that I knew and I'd known him for 5 or 6 years, you know, so we like were somewhat friends and then didn't find out until much later on that his dad was Haitian. And so he was half Haitian. And so, yeah, it was cool to be like, oh, holy cow, like, we have very similar roots and like relate in that way.
That's interesting. I had asked my son if he wanted to do one of those genetic tests. And the first time I asked him, he was like, yeah, that might be cool. And then anytime I've asked him since, he's like, yeah, no, I don't want to do that. Like, I just want to make sure that he knows that opportunity is there. Also, like, I don't want him to feel pressured into doing it, which he's clearly uncomfortable with right now. So from my experience with adoptees, you know, it's a pretty wide range of people who want to find those connections and make more of those connections and people who are like, I have my family and, you know, I don't need to go looking for more situations that are unknown to me and maybe not want to know what those answers are. So, and it might change in the future. And, you know, I will support whatever decision that is.
Yeah, with like DNA testing and genetic genealogy, like things are really changing for.
Yeah.
Because my parents have done stuff like that too. But I think one, it's an testament to how comfortable and acclimated they are with the life that they have now, that they don't see the need to try to change the dynamic with that, because I've seen it where it's awesome. It brings families together. They get to meet like a sibling or a relative that they never knew. But on the other hand, it could be the flip where you find out, like, you get the death records of like who you may have known, if you know. So there's just a wide range of things that can occur when you open up that. I see why, especially if he's a younger 14-year-old, why it could be something that is kind of like frightful. And maybe when he's older, it'll be something that'll be like more interested in, but at the same time, that can be like a very scary thing to like face.
Yeah, I can see that.
Do you feel like you have had to constantly explain your family, and how do you handle that?
No, not anymore. I guess when I was younger, sometimes like I would explain it, and then even with like extended family, I was at like a cousin's wedding and the family that was being married into, you know, just because I'm adopted and a lot of my family accepts me doesn't mean the extended family is going, you know, so there's like difficulties in that. But I've never actually like felt the need to have to explain it to anyone else, because I guess it's not always their business anyway. What was the old saying? Like, my great grandmother lived to be 99 years old, minding her own business. It wasn't something that needed to be explained. It's not always like the right of someone else to like just know your situation if you don't want them to know. There's a lot of freedom in that. But as for like people that are close in my life, most of them like know like my story and my situation, just because like feeling comfortable around them. Because as you build relationships with people, you build trust and understanding, and you discover more and more about one another. And so I guess that's kind of if that kind of answered it, I guess.
I try and tell them, once you tell someone your story, you can't take it back. and that's not for everybody to know. It's for you to choose who you're going to entrust that in. And so I try and give them the confidence to know that they don't need to answer anybody's questions. And that's kind of how I handle it. I'm probably getting meaner in my old age, but I have been the white mom of Black children for 12 years now, and it's nobody's freaking business. And in this day and age, if you like have to question why people in the same family look different, that's an issue in and of itself. So when I do get comments, if it's from somebody that I don't know or someone I barely know, I usually make like a sarcastic comment back, or I just don't answer. So people are nosy, just like you said.
They are. Yeah. And, you know, I feel like it took me a real, and I'm not saying that I have figured it out by any means, but I tell my kids all the time, some things are private. Just because someone asked you a question does not mean that you're obligated to answer. And it's a different situation for my kids, but I have one on the spectrum. So my goal was, you don't need to tell everybody. You know what I mean? You don't have to. People don't need to know your health information just because they're in your orbit. But I feel like that's a really good lesson that I have only recently learned. You know, some things are private, and it's okay to answer a question. That's private information, yeah. Which I've only started doing recently. The place where you grew up, do you feel like there was an equal representation of Black and white people in the population?
I don't know. I never really put like that much value in that. I think one of the coolest things I think my mom has ingrained in us is the character of person. And it doesn't really matter what like the person looks like. I've never really like sought out to specifically interact with people who look like me or to like fit into a group that is. It was always just kind of like, man, I really vibe with this person.
Yeah.
Whether they look like me or not. That's kind of gets back to a big thing I think about is like culture is beautiful. So is individuality within culture. You know, there's also the fact that everyone is so different, you know, in each group of people, there's still so many different things within that collective population. Like in the Midwest, believe it or not, there's not that many Black people. And then down South, believe it or not, there's a lot more. As for like the friends that I would interact with, it wasn't a defining characteristic that made one greater than the other. I never really was hurt or affected by the disparity of the populations. It was just who I chose to surround myself with. Yeah, I feel like society puts a lot of outside pressure to like interact with the people who look like you. That's kind of like reverting to what the issues were in the earlier, you know, the people that I've hung out with have looked every shade of the rainbow. One of the coolest things is, so when I meet like new friends, the one thing they always comment on is what I enjoy for music, because I literally listen to all music, and it's not mm-hmm. just like the genres you'll find like in like Russian music and like, that you'd find in India, music that you'd find in Vietnam. You know what I mean? Like, I think everyone's cool. I think it's fun to like learn about like new people, what they're like. And
the adoption community puts a lot of pressure on making sure that when you are raising a child of color, that you are putting them in populations where they don't feel like they're the only one. I was just curious how that has been for you, whether that was your experience or not, and how that may have affected your outlook. Like, you clearly have a very solid sense of self. At my son's school, between this year and last year, I think last year there were only 2 Black children in the class. And this year there's like almost half the class. And I know he got kind of excited about that when he went in for like orientation. He came home and he was like, that's kind of cool. But he still just hangs with the same friends. And it doesn't really seem to drive who he's hanging out with. It's like, he's into anime and video games, and the kids that are into anime and video games are who he hangs out with. He actually has a pretty interesting music preference. And he was telling me like his friends were teasing him. Lately, he's been listening to a lot of like 80s music and 90s music. You know, his friends are kind of teasing him, but he feels very confident about it. And he's enjoying like learning about various genres. And, you know, I love that he has confidence to be himself, even when people are like, that's weird, dude. He's like, yeah, I like that.
I think a lot of people don't realize that like the curiosities of people that don't necessarily understand that things they say end up doing a lot more harm or doing is a lot more counterproductive of like what their motivations are. For your son, more than likely 90% of the experiences where he's realized he was the only Black person was when someone else told him. And like a lot of times it's like, looking back in those situations, what have I noticed? A lot of people really need to think of the dynamics of like humans as individuals and as collectives, and then base their actions and motivations from that.
It's refreshing to hear, like, people want to do things correctly. And I think that's where we get a lot of our education around adoption. And we don't have centuries of experience. We have decades. It's nice to hear from someone that has a great relationship with their parents and is so self-aware and confident. They loved you and they supported you and they did the best they could, which doesn't mean they didn't make mistakes, but you guys have a good relationship to this day. And it sounds like your adoption went really well. It's really good to hear, because I mean, I personally think that everyone wants to do the best that they possibly can. You know, a lot of times when you have an adoption or a placement of two different cultures, people don't really know. They just have like what they learned in pride classes, or, you know, what they're seeing in the media, which, as you know, is sometimes negative.
A lot of your talks are like funny, and having this experience with you, I'm just really impressed. Your parents must be very proud of you. I just really appreciate you spending time with us and want to thank you for that.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you subscribe and follow us on social. We hope that you join us again next time and keep on fostering the future.